Right. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to this last session of the Windows 8 App Day. I hope you had a great day today, and I hope I can show you a few things you will like for this last session. I also hope I won't go over time too much, but if I do, well, you're in Antwerp, it's Friday evening, so you'll be stuck in traffic anyway. 5 minutes more or less won't matter, I suppose. This is a session which is actually a case study of an application I made, which was just released yesterday in a preview version in the Windows Store. It's called Mime for Facebook, and it's sort of a Facebook client, but I'll get into that a bit later on. Now, I have three big things I'm going to talk about, or three big parts in this session. Some of them are technical. We'll go into constellation of tasks, performance, tips, architecture stuff, high level and lower level. But of course, I need to start by explaining you what this is all about. So I'm going to start with a quick demo of the application. And then I'm going to tell a little story about, well, how this application happened, and what happened and what didn't happen. And after that, I try to extract five essentials from what I learned by building this application. And we're going to look into each of those essentials and see how you can reach them when you're building your own application. But of course, I will have to start with a quick demo first. So let's fire this up. And I'm going to duplicate so you can see. Yep. So my Windows 8 filled with unordered applications because I tend to make a lot of demo apps. This is the Mime for Facebook application, which I've just installed. It already has a live tile. This is actually my Facebook, so I would like to excuse in advance for the pictures my friends post on it. I'm not responsible for that. So let's have a look. You start the application. Oh. Are we... I'm on duplicate. The cable is still plugged in. Okay, so the cable is plugged in a bit better into my computer now. So let's hope it lasts. So here we go. Quick overview of the application. Of course, it's a Facebook application, Facebook client application. So one of the most important parts is probably the news feed. This will fetch the data from Facebook and will then show you your news feed as it is on Facebook. What you see here is the effect of a very bad internet connection. But, I'm going to try and refresh that. There we go. Took a bit. So you can just view your news feed. This is everything that's coming into my personal Facebook account, my personal feed. And of course, you can snap this and you can move it around. You can look at your news feed like this. It will actually automatically show you when there's new items by showing you an arrow, so you can view that quickly and do something else while having it in snap view, still get updates from your Facebook all the time. Of course, you can also view single updates. Apparently, I immediately took a very nice picture. In here, you can, of course, look at the comments, which will automatically load incrementally. If you want to see more, you can just open it like that. You can like it, kind of like this picture. So, and of course, you can comment on it. You can also comment on, update your status. You can update links. You can actually share links from other applications through the Mime for Facebook application. which will then appear in your feed. You can do the same with pictures or with text. Anyway, the things that make up a Windows 8 application by integrating it with the Windows 8 system, those are in here. And that's actually a tip if you're making your own application. It's always a good idea to integrate search, integrate the contracts, the charms, etc., etc. Now, next to that, you can also have a look at your friends, in which we implemented Semantic Zoom. You can, of course, look at your own profile. Let's have a look at what's on mine. Here we go. That's my profile view. And in there, you can, of course, go to the same type of view we had before. Next to that, as I said, Search Charm is also integrated, so let's try that. I'm going to search for Kenneth. This is actually the guy who designed this application, so I'm not a very good designer, which I will prove in a while. So this is the one who designed it. And that's actually a quick overview of what this application can do. There's one more thing here. There was something that started annoying me about Facebook after a while, and that is that I get a news feed which I can sort by what Facebook thinks is the right order, or which I can sort by top stories. But it's quite hard to show or to tell Facebook what should be in your news feed. So I thought about that and I figured, well, let's see what we can do about it. And I gave the app the ability to create your own custom feeds. So now you can say, well, I'm going to make, these are a few default feeds I put in here. Let's change this one. I'm going to say, well, I want to view the pictures. Let's delete status updates of, well, all my friends. Why not? And maybe I should name that one picture feed now. But what you will see then is that you will only see the pictures you've stated you wanted to see. So this app actually enables you to customize your Facebook a bit more. Now, that's all there is in there for the moment. This is a preview version, so we really focused on a few key features of Facebook. But I do invite you to download it and especially provide some feedback if you wish, because we're really looking for feedback on what's good, what's not so good. And at the same time, we will keep on working towards version 1.0. Anyway, I, of course, needed to show you something like this, because we need to know what we're talking about. Now I can continue. Let's see. Okay. So there we go. How did we start making this? Well, it was summer. I had been doing quite some Windows 8 stuff for my job. I'm a technical consultant at Real Dolmen, one of the bigger ICT firms in Belgium. And we're actually trying to do a lot with Windows 8 at the moment. So, for example, the guys from the Persoup here, we helped them out a bit with their Windows 8 applications. So I had delivered a few trainings and I had helped on some apps. And I thought, well, I have some spare time left, so instead of spending it with my friends and going out, why not start building an application? So I thought, well, okay, I'm going to make an application. What am I going to make? And I started thinking, well, I want a Facebook app. So I was very optimistic and I said, I'm going to build on my own a Facebook app. That was the first mistake. But anyway, I had this idea in my head, and I said, well, I'm going to continue on this idea. So I started doing some preliminary tests with the Facebook API, of course, and everything looked quite okay. It seemed to work, and I started laying out planning. I wanted to finish it by general availability. I started laying out the features I wanted to have in the application. And, well, everything looked okay, so I started wireframing. And, well, then something happened. The thing that happened was this. I actually did not say these things myself, but it's what you can read online. So this was a big problem because the application, obviously the basis is that Facebook API. And then all of a sudden, when you start digging deeper into it, you start noticing all kinds of problems. It's terribly unreliable. It's very poorly documented. Well, there's a lot of documentation, but the documentation simply isn't right. As long as you just want to post a status update, that's easy. But if you want to go a bit deeper and you want to get all the stories from the feedback, it starts getting quite annoying. So I had to really rethink what I was going to do. And that's how I get to my five essentials, actually. The first one of them is one of the basic things I did for rethinking this app, and that's focus. I'll get to that immediately. That's one of the essentials in my case. If you're starting an app, you need to focus on a specific part. After that, we're going to look into the looks. I know this is a developer session, but it's too important to ignore the looks of an application in Windows 8. Next, we're going to talk about reliability. So what is reliability? How do you define that? And how can you make sure your app is as reliable as possible? That's a bunch of tips and tricks. It's a bit of an overview of the architecture I used and which components I used in that architecture and why. Now we're going to talk about performance. That's the part in which we will see quite a bit of code. And we're going to end with another important part, and that's the statistics and logs. So what can you do, or which tools, which components can you use to get as much information about how your application is used, or which errors occur, so you can make the application even better. There's a few tools for that. And I'm going to show you my favorite one. But let's start with focus. So once you've got your application's idea, you want to start building immediately. One of the worst things you can do is just start programming. Because actually, it's always better to start by drawing wireframes, drawing an architecture plan, and focusing on one specific idea or one specific part of your app you want to do very well, instead of doing everything, well, a bit of this, a bit of that, a bit of that. So I was quite time constrained, and I figured, well, what do people want when they look at their Facebook application? They want to view their stories, their newsline, friends' timelines, they want to comment, they want to like, they want to share. So that was the focus for this first version. I figured I might as well start with this and do this well, and add features later on, like albums and events, that's all planned. Then doing everything, but just a bit, but not very well. So that's the first tip I would like to give you if you're making an app. Find focus. Focus on doing something very well, instead of doing a bunch of things half good, half bad. Next to that, there's this one thing that managers like to call a unique selling point. It's very hard to find, and it's not something I'm sure I found, but that's something that will drive your application as well. Unique selling point, the one thing your application does differently or better than other applications. In my case, I figured I needed something like that, simply because I figured there's going to be like tens of Facebook applications soon enough. At the moment, still quite okay, but I'm pretty sure there will be other ones. That's where the idea of customizing the feeds came into play. Future will have to tell if that's actually a unique selling point or not. Who knows? So that's what I wanted to focus on. And after I had that, I had to start thinking about other things because, well, I now knew what I wanted to go and do. I also figured I could do this in the amount of time I had. But then there's this other thing when you're making an app of which you probably know a lot of other competitors are going to make the same. And that's trying to stand out in another way, and that's by the looks of your application. It's very important, in my opinion, And I can't do that. I'm not a designer. I'm actually the kind of guy who has an image in his head of how the application has to look, but if I start trying to actually make that, it comes out terribly wrong. So this is where the part of the planning where I hired a designer. And this is where it's all of a sudden started to become serious, because now all of a sudden this thing was actually costing me money without, next to tremendous amounts of time, but it was costing me money without, being sure I would ever get anything from it. Actually, that was a very good driver for me. So I was now losing money. So that actually drove me to meet my deadlines and continue programming. So if you need some kind of driver for that, make sure you do something that's costing you money and you will probably finish your app. So let's start with an example of the story feed. This is what it looked like in the beginning. This is my work. Not very proud of it. I wanted to fill the whole screen. As you can see, this is the beginning. I'm just still a few things missing there. The colors in the headers, they define what kind of update it is. So a status update is blue, a link, in this case two pictures are magenta, etc. But I was quite happy with this at that time. So I continued with that, and I made an algorithm that made some pictures a bit bigger, etc., etc. And I still thought this looked quite well. And then my friend, the designer, came over and he said, Kevin, throw that away because it's really, really bad. I was actually a bit annoyed because this took me a lot of work. And then I came up with this, which actually ended in this eventually. Now there's good reasoning why he did it like this. And that is that if you look at the thing I did, you had a variable size wrap grid, as we know, and it was nicely filled. So from a developer point of view, I thought that was pretty nice to do. But from an end user point of view, the effect that the previous ones had was that your eye is going everywhere. You're reading the grid from left to right, from top left to bottom right. So you're not really following the flow of your stories. That's why the designer said, do it like this. So we're not filling the grid anymore, but your eye automatically sees columns here and reads from top to bottom, which is the order you get your stories in. That's one of the reasons why I needed a designer. I don't think about stuff like that. I think about stuff like that when they tell me, but not in advance. Same goes for a single story. So this is what I came up with, a picture. I figured, okay, I need that header, I need to know who's posting the picture, and I need a place for comments and likes. Fair enough, I kind of like this. And I actually made another version of this, which had a symbol to magnify it, some more comments. And then the designer came along, and he finally came up with this. Why did he do that? Content is king, and your focus should be on the most important part of the screen. Now, if you're looking at a picture, what's the most important part? That's that picture, not the comments, not the border around it. So that's why this is like that. Same consistency comes back to the picture on the left and the header. That are right next to the picture and the timing right underneath it, like on the story feed. So you get consistency and you get focus on what's important on that screen. So why am I showing you all this in a developer session? Just because it's very important, stuff like this. And we all know it's important, but probably some of you can, but some of you probably can't, like me, come up with this on our own. So that's why it's important to talk to a friend of yours who is a designer and let him handle this stuff. Anyway, onto the reliability. This is more getting closer to what we're used to. When you want to make your app reliable, you need to define what reliability is. So what is reliability? Reliability is actually a lot of things. There's the UI side of things, and there's the technical side of things. As far as the UI side of things, UX side of things is concerned, your user needs to trust your application. It's very important. And trust not only comes from making sure it's performant enough or making sure it doesn't crash. That's terribly important, of course. Your app shouldn't crash. But trust also comes from consistency in your app. A button should be a button. The same context should be kept when you're in a regular view or the snapped view. Those are things that define trust. Those are things that make sure your user relies on your application. So again, that's something to really keep in mind. I actually had to force myself from time to time to stop doing things I thought were pretty cool as far as the developer side is concerned, because it really didn't make any sense from an end user point of view. But of course, there's more to reliability than that. Reliability, you need to make sure your app doesn't crash. You need to make sure you can test your app so it stays reliable. And that's when we get to the architecture part of the story. So I'm first gonna show you the building blocks I used. Maybe I should show you in Visual Studio quickly. Right. Now you see my notes. So the most important ones here, and I'm immediately going to show you how they work together. I have my .facebook client. That's the Windows Store application. Oh, again. Yeah, better. So I have my.facebook client. That's the Windows Store application. Next to that, there's a background task. That's a Windows RT component. That's actually used to update live tiles, fetch notifications, etc. Those are the two things I consider the client part. I have a little shared component here, mine.facebookclient.common, that contains common framework classes that are used both by Facebook client and Facebook client.background task. Then you have the Facebook SDK broker. That's actually the part where most of my business logic is in. That's a class library, and that's the one that talks to Facebook directly. So my client app, the Windows Store application, does not talk to Facebook directly. Everything is done through that broker. So that separates out my stuff a bit. And then the other two important parts are these two here. That's mine.framework and mine.framework.winrt component. That actually consists of a bunch of base classes I use across my Windows Store applications, not only for this one, but for other applications as well. What's in there? That's notify, observable base, exception handlers, object storage helpers to save stuff to my local storage or roaming storage, stuff like that, stuff you can use across applications. Now, if you look at this in a nice PowerPoint, you get something like this. I'm just gonna do it without switching views again. It's probably faster. So the framework component, Facebook client.common, that's also kind of framework for the client components. The SDK broker, which talks to the Facebook API, that's actually a bunch of agents, and of course the application itself. And let's see, and that's how they all connect to each other. Now the nice thing about this is, I can actually just separate out a part of my application, test that independently, and ensure that it will really work. And obviously you can reuse a lot of this stuff. Now, that's the high-level architecture. Inside these components, other stuff is used, of course. I was talking about reliability. What is one of the ways to ensure reliability? That's not reinventing the hot water, as they say. There's a lot of components available. Some components have been around for a long time, other components are quite new, especially with Windows Store applications, since it is quite new. And those components can really help you build your application, so you don't have to rewrite all that stuff. One of the ones I used on client side is MVVM. I used to design pattern MVVM. Do you know, you guys know MVVM? I see a lot of yes here, so that's good. So you also know this is more or less a de facto standard pattern for XAML applications from Silverlight, WPF, Windows Phone, etc., etc. So I figured I would want to use that pattern as well, specifically for the separation of concerns it offers. So I had to decide on a library to do this with. I chose MVVM Lite for this. MVVM Lite is a library that's been around for quite some while, some time already, and that's actually a proven component. I consider it a proven component at this moment. It's very lightweight, it's very extensible, and contains everything you need to get your application MVVM ready. So that's one of the components I used. Another component I chose to use is JSON.NET. Why did I use that one? Well, a lot of the stuff that comes back from Facebook is actually just JSON data. There's no way we're going to write code to manually parse all that stuff. That's bound to result in lots and lots of problems. So you need to choose something to serialize and deserialize from to JSON. There's actually a JSON data contract serializer included in .NET for Windows Store applications. I chose JSON.NET. Why? Because it's a bit faster and it actually allows me to customize stuff a bit more. Facebook API, for example, sometimes they give dates back in daytime format, sometimes they give dates back in Unix time format, sometimes they don't give them back at all, even though you would expect them to. So you need something that can handle all that stuff. You need something that can serialize to a nice model with base classes and inheriting classes, etc., etc. And JSON.NET actually does that, and it does that quite well and very fast. So that's another tip if you want to look into JSON serialization. JSON.NET is a really, really good one to, for that. And the third big component I used was the Facebook C# SDK. Really relies on Dynamics and is also proven component at the moment. So actually, those are the three big third-party libraries I use here. And there's one common denominator across them. And that's a very important one from my point of view, and that is all these three are proven components. This MVVM Lite has been around since one of the first Silverlight 2, Silverlight 3, something like that. JSON.NET, I don't even know how long it's been around. Facebook C# SDK, that's currently at version 6.something. These are proven components. So if you're building something, a bigger application, and you're going to use third-party components, choose the ones that have already proven their worth. You definitely do not want to end up having to wait for someone else to fix a problem for you somewhere deep down in a third-party component you're using. So that's actually another thing I had to fight with myself for, because I tend to like to use the new stuff, the new components. But if you're building bigger application, it's probably better to turn to the reliable components, the one you already know. So fitting that into the architecture, you get something like this. So the MIME.NET framework has a dependency on JSON.NET. Why? Because there's actually something in there that serializes to my object storage, for which I use JSON. the Facebook SDK broker, also as a reliance dependency on JSON.NET, obviously, and on Facebook SDK. And the client has most dependencies, MVVM Lite, JSON.NET, and also the Facebook SDK. Why is it reliant on the Facebook SDK? Because I actually said all my connections with Facebook are through the SDK broker. That's actually to report progress, upload progress when you're uploading pictures to Facebook. There's a few interfaces defined in the Facebook SDK for which I needed this dependency. But that's all it uses for that. The rest is separated out to the SDK broker. So what are, in my opinion, advantages of architecting it like this instead of just putting everything together in one big app? Well, we're using proven components, community-backed. All is open source, by the way. Most of them are at GitHub or Codeplex. By separating out these components, you can actually reuse them, test them separately, and use them outside or inside the current project. Let me give you an example. By using MVVM, I can actually reuse view models I wrote, business logic, let's say. I can reuse that same view model on a bunch of different views. That's actually what happens with the header in my application. Same view model, different views on top of that. So that's a pretty important one in my head. And actually, it does take a bit of work in the beginning, but it saves tremendous amounts of time at the end. One other example is on Facebook, you have commenting. You can comment on everything. And if you've looked at this, the types of posts you can comment on, pictures, status updates, etc., etc. If you are going to program that without thinking about it in advance, you actually end up copy-pasting a bunch of code everywhere. In this case, if I need to add some functionality which needs commenting, it's simply a matter of adding that view with that view model in the place I need it to be, instead of having to rewrite all that. So this actually ensures the reliability of the app is higher. This is probably the most important part of this part of the session, and that is that you should always assume failure. How can I explain that? Does that code look familiar? It's something I wrote a lot. I used to write a lot. It says that if condition set happens, this should fail. Otherwise, if condition A do A, else do B, etc., etc. This is actually code we all write a lot. Now, imagine an SDK you do not have control about. An example, on Facebook you have pictures. You can see pictures everywhere. You would expect a picture to come back from that SDK, from that API, with a field type that says picture. Well, actually, pictures from Facebook, they can come back indeed with type picture. But you also have the type picture, which includes a bunch of pictures. It's still quite OK. You also have links that are actually pictures. Yeah, it's getting a bit harder. And then you have stories that come from other applications. So we all know Twitter applications that can also post to Facebook. If you get that on Facebook, that actually doesn't really come out as a picture. It comes out as an application story. Facebook has nice types, App Story 1 and 2. No one really knows what the difference is. And in those app stories, you, again, can have pictures, a bunch of pictures, links that are pictures. And sometimes there are pictures that don't even have a type. And Facebook keeps on adding functionality continuously. So if I were to write code like this, which I actually did in the beginning, this would constantly fail. You would constantly get errors because I say, if condition A, B, C, or D, then fail, else do this, do that, do that. By assuming failure, I mean you should write your code, or could write your code like this. So I failed unless condition A or condition B or condition C. And that actually, that actually saved me tremendous amounts of time in the end. Now on to performance and on to code as well. Cancellation of tasks. If you're building an application that talks to your backend services, and you're building it with MVVM or anything stateful, actually, you will fire requests to your backend, and your user might not necessarily be at that same page at the moment that requests comes back. So you need to somehow cancel that task. And I'm going to show you what I mean by this. So let's see. In the app, I'm going to run the application. Let's make this a bit bigger. Here we go. I'm immediately going to go into how you actually cancel this. But at the moment, the important thing to know is once I navigate away from a page, I call a method which will cancel all running brokers. So let's quickly run this, and I'm going to start Fiddler at the same moment. At the same time. Where is Fiddler? There we go. So this is actually live. Someone here just posted hello. So let's go to the friends overview. Here you can see all the requests to Facebook. Important here is look at the ones that say graph.facebook.com, the graph API, that's the one you talk to, Facebook. Now, I'm going to go to a few friends. So that means I'm navigating to the page where the friend overview is. And that navigation actually triggers the loading of the timeline of that friend. So the cover picture and a bunch of stories. So you will see some stuff happening here. Okay, like this and like that. I'm just going to click a few, because it's actually what I want to show you. Now, you've noticed that I clicked, I navigated back, and when I clicked, a few requests were fired, I navigated back, and that request stopped, and I clicked again, requests were fired again, I navigated back, and those requests stopped. As you can see, there's nothing else coming from graph.facebook.com is coming in anymore. That is because once I navigate back, the running tasks are canceled. As you can imagine, just clicking on a friend is actually firing a bunch of tasks to get it's all story feed. That's 15, 20, 20 items, 40, depending on whose feed you're looking at. If I were not to cancel this, all that stuff would just keep on running in the background. And of course, all that stuff would return to my application, and my application would somehow be notified that new stuff is coming in and would try to handle those. And that's actually what happens if you don't cancel it. So let's show that. I'm just gonna comment out the cancellation on this page. And we're building again. Let's see. Ooh, I have a breakpoint here still. Oh. Ooh, yeah. Sorry about that. Right, that's better. So, on to here. And let's look at Fiddler again. delete all this. Onto the friends overview. Now let's try and go to a few friends. It immediately feels a lot slower for me doing this. Let's just see what gives. Now, I've already stopped, but as you can see, requests are still coming in from graph.facebook.com. And they will keep on coming in and coming in and coming in because I now did not cancel this anymore. Now, you probably don't really see it, but if you're at this computer, you immediately feel that the clicking is going slower and slower and slower. And it will keep on going slower the more friends you click, because those requests just keep on coming and coming, even though you don't need them anymore. So that's why it's very important to cancel your tasks. And I'm going to show you how you can do that. There's something called the cancellation token source in .NET. And a lot of methods accept that cancellation token source. So what you actually need to do is you need to create an instance of that cancellation token source from the part of your application where you're calling the API or service or your own custom tasks. So in this case, that's my view mode. So I will show you. I think I was on the profile. So, wait, I can actually find it here. Here we go. So, let's take, it's actually the story broker fetches the newsfeed items, the user broker fetches the cover picture. So, this is what happens when you navigate to a page. You get in the initialization module, and the story broker is initialized with a new cancellation token source passed in. So I pass in the token. Once this is passed in, this story broker, which is in my SDK broker, contains codes. I'm going to navigate to it, fetch. Not the prefetch. Lots and lots of codes. And load next story, that's the one. So once that story broker is initialized by passing in that token, I had to write a bit of code that will ensure that once cancellation is called for, the code handles it accordingly. So in this case, that means this is where it happens. In this case, that means when I try to take a story from the list I put it in, I pass in the cancellation token, and you put that in a try catch. That's actually by design. And in this catch, you catch an operation canceled exception. So once I call cancel from my view model, my broker will be notified of cancellation, and it will throw an exception. It will throw an exception of type operation canceled exception. And if that is the case, my code, instead of keeping on fetching items and keeping on adding items to the list to return, just say no, stop. Stop with going to Facebook API and return, in this case, an empty list. And the one thing I still need to show you is how you cancel that. So in the profile view, where I put this in comment just a few minutes ago, it's actually very simple. The cancel brokers method simply tells the token source to cancel. So if you look at this, it's actually pretty simple. You pass in a cancellation token source from the caller part of your code, and in the part of your code that executes the fetch, or this can actually be anything. In this case, it's the call of an API. In other cases, it can be a long-running task, like encoding 20,000 pictures, maybe. If you do that, and you navigate away from the page, you simply call cancel on that token, you handle the operation canceled exception, and your code won't keep on running anymore. If you want to do this in your own methods, it's actually more or less the same. It's built into a lot of collection types, HTTP REST calls. But you can also do it on your own. So if you're writing an async method, just accept a token in that method source. And in that method source, you check if the token has been canceled. And in that case, you handle the operation canceled exception in the caller exactly the same as I've shown you. So that's cancellation. It actually helps the performance of your app tremendously. Then another part is produce, consume, consume, produce. This is something called the producer-consumer pattern. I don't know if you've heard about this. No? You've probably used something like it or tried to write code to do something like it. Imagine a case where you're calling one of your backend services to fill a list of items that is shown on your views. Typically, you'd say, okay, that's very simple, just call my backend service, wait for the items to return, fill the list, return it to my UI. That works. The problem is, what if two or three or four different parts of your UI or your application start to fetch items from that same list? Example, if you look at this app, you've got your story feed, your news feed, that actually works on the same backend collection as the single story feed. So once you click an item, the part where you see the comments and you can comment and like, it's actually the same backend collection. That's actually different threads trying to access the same collection. Now, if you try that with a general collection, it causes tremendously unreliable behavior because those collections are not thread safe. That actually means that you have to find a solution for this. And that solution is the producer-consumer pattern. And it actually says that one part of your code, one component, is going to produce items, and there's X other parts of your application that are going to consume those items. In this case, the producer of my application fetches stories from Facebook and parses them so I can use them in my application. That's a component that starts running whenever you click on a story feed. And then there's the consumers, and those consumers, those are gonna ask whenever from different threads to that collection where the producer is adding items to, well, can I please get an item from that? And that pattern ensures that no matter which part of your code and no matter from which thread an item is asked, it will be thread safe. It will automatically wait for those items to become available, and it will actually even give them back in the correct order. So if you ever run into a problem like that, and it's something most of you will run into, I think, then you should look into this pattern. Now, the good thing is, it's very easy to implement, because in .NET there's something called a concurrent namespace, concurrent collections. Those are actually thread-safe collections which have the producer-consumer pattern built in. So it's actually very, very easy to do. And there's something called a blocking collection, generic collection, in C#. You just use that as the list you're going to ask items from. So not an observable collection, not a list, but a blocking collection. And your producer, so the part of your code that's fetching data from whatever backend service you have, uses the blocking collection dot try add method to add an item to it once it gets it back from its backend service. And the consumer parts of your code, those use the try take method on that same collection to get items from that collection. Nice thing is, these three things are more or less all you need to have a thread-safe producer-consumer pattern in your code. So get rid of the observable collections, or lists in this case, because it's typically on your backend. But once you have different threads accessing the same collection, just use a blocking collection. Try add when an item has to be added, and try take when an item has to be fetched from it. And the nice thing is, if your producer isn't ready with adding items to the list, the try take method will automatically wait for that item to become available before it returns. And if you're sure nothing else has to be added to the concurrent collection, it's called the complete adding method. And of course, I'm going to show you this quickly in code. It's actually used throughout the app. So I'm just going to open up the biggest one, which is the one I've been talking about, the one that fetches all the stories. So let's have a look at this one. All non-consumed stories, that's a blocking collection, which contains everything that hasn't been shown in the UI yet. So it's actually, instead of a regular list, as you can see, I do keep the stories that are already in my UI available in my backend. That's a general list. I don't need a multi-thread safety on that one. But I do need it on this part. So I have one blocking collection, all non-consumed stories. And a part of my code is going to fill this. That part of my code is my prefetcher that's actually automatically called. So let's have a look at that. All non-consumed stories. Just gonna do it like this. It's probably the simplest. Here we go. So I'm in this part of my code when an item has been returned from Facebook API. And I just use try add this story. And I say, well, how much time do you get for trying to add it? You get an infinite amount of time in this case, because I actually really want that story. And the nice thing is this also supports cancellation. So same logic as I said before, the cancellation of tasks. And well, that's it for the producing part of my code. What about consuming? That's actually as simple as this. Try take, and as the output parameter, it's the last story try to take from that collection. So if you write your code like this, you have a thread safe, producer consumer pattern. In this case, I've shown you three lines of code, and that's it. So that's another tip that might come in handy for a lot of applications, I think. Now we were talking about performance, and I'm going to go through this quickly because I'm already more or less out of time. So we've got some usual suspects, and that's offloading long running tasks to the background. We've got async await. So you more or less get that out of the box. Cancel tasks when they're no longer needed. It's important as well. When you're using async await, remember that in the backend, that's a parallel task library. So you can actually use task when any or task when all to wait for one long running task to complete, or to wait for all long running tasks to complete. That's something you will probably use a lot as well. An extended splash screen is another one of those little tips you can use to, well, fake fast startup of your application, let's put it like that. And another one is prefetch when possible. So that's where the producer-consumer pattern comes into play. Of course, showing progress with the progress bars is pretty obvious. And there's something called performance profiler that's built into Visual Studio you can use as well. But next to these technical things, there's one that's even more important. And that is that performance is actually the illusion of performance, for some part. By which I mean that how the performance of your app is percepted is more important than what the performance of your application really is. Don't shoot me for saying this. I'm going to give you an example of this. That story feed again. When you scroll, it will automatically get the next 20 items. that you can actually get that built into I support incremental download. I decided not to do that in this case for one specific reason. And that is that if you do it like this, what will happen? You get your feed, you get a call to the backend service which uses that ThreadSafe collection. Give me back 20 items. Those 20 items are returned to your client and are added to the observable collection that's bound to your grid view. What happens is that you will see your application hang a little bit. Just a little bit. But if you're scrolling and you immediately add 20 items, especially on low-end machines, it will hang. It will go a bit slower. That is because, well, you add those 20 items at once, a lot of notify change stuff is going on, and your UI is a bit blocked. I thought it was a bit annoying. So what's actually done in this case? Well, of course, data is prefetched to produce a consumer pattern. On scroll, thanks to this prefetching, the items are already there. I don't need to call the Facebook API anymore. So they are immediately returned. But instead of returning them all 20 at once, I actually ask for them one by one. So my Windows Store application does not talk to my backend and ask, give me 20 items. It's actually a loop for I0219. Give me one, give me one, give me one, give me one, and add it to that collection. The result of this is that if you measure it in absolute time, this is actually slower. But if you look at how it's perceived, the UI doesn't hang anymore, and the user gets the impression that your items are added very fluidly and one by one. So that's what I mean by perception versus reality. This is simply the perception of faster performance that beats the actual faster performance from an end user point of view. Another important one, reducing memory consumption. This is a bit obvious because, well, you want to keep memory consumption low always, especially as we're working with low-end machines. But there's an added reason for this. And this added reason is that when your application gets suspended, so the user navigates away from your application, starts using another one, as long as it isn't terminated, it's very easy to go back from suspended state to running state. Actually, it's a simple memory dump that's kept by Windows, and that mem dump is reused when your user goes back to your application. The thing is, we do not have control about when an application comes from suspended state back to running or from suspended to terminated. But what we do know is that the more memory your application uses, the higher its memory footprint is, the more likely it is to get thrown out of memory and terminated. So if you keep your memory footprint as low as possible, the possibility of your application getting terminated gets lower. And the lower the possibility of your application getting terminated is, the faster it will return to a running state from suspended state instead of having to go through termination. So that's pretty important reason to keep your memory footprint low. Now, there's a bunch of XAML performance tips as well, and I am going to go through those very fast. Obviously, you do not want to load resources that aren't necessary. We all like to split up our data templates in different dictionaries, etc., etc. Standard styles in this dictionary, others in other dictionary. That's good. But the thing is, once you use one resource from a dictionary, the complete dictionary has to be parsed. So it's very important to know that. For example, if you use static resource my default background color or my default foreground color on the start page of your application, and that static resource happens to be defined in one of your resource dictionaries which contains 500 other resources, well, all those 500 other resources have to be parsed just to show your initial page. So it's actually a very good idea to not use any static resources on your initial page, even though you define them, even though you actually use the same colors throughout your application. And why is that? Simply to ensure that for application startup, your app doesn't have to parse that complete XAML dictionary. Same for splitting up your data templates into dictionaries. Using common static resources that are used throughout your application should go in the app XAML. I mean, should be referenced in app XAML, so resource dictionary in XAML, so it's available from everywhere. But if you're using data templates or resources that are only used on, say, two or three views, import them only in those views and not in the app XAML, because they're not necessary there. Your user might not access those pages, and if he never accesses it, well, the data templates have been parsed for nothing, and that just costs time. And specifically on low-end machines, it's quite important. We work on pretty high-end development machines, all of you, I suppose. But well, probably the most standard machine is a cheap ARM tablet with 1366 resolution. So these things are pretty important. Optimizing element count, another one. Do not write rectangle fill is black when you've got a background property, because the first thing results in an instance of grid and an instance of rectangle, and the second one results in an instance of grid in your memory. Reuse brushes. So XAML is smart enough to know that if that color is defined in a static resource, that it only has to make one instance of it and reuse it. If you write code like this, color 3F42CC will result in two solid brush instances. If you write it like this, you will only have one instance that's reused. Minimize redrawing to the same place on the screen. So what you got in this case is you've got a grid filling your page with a black background, and afterwards we say, well, one of the rows should be filled in white. What happens here is that first your complete screen is drawn in black, and then a part of it is overlaying in white. So you actually draw more or less half of your screen twice. So something like this is better in that case. Two rectangles, one for the top row, one for the other row. So you only have drawing on one part of your screen. And there's a lot more about this. But luckily, I don't have all of them in this session, because getting long enough. I have two slides left, and they're both about markup. So the fifth essential I wanted to talk about was statistics and logs. Pretty important, because you want to know when your app crashes, you want to know how your users use your app so you can make it better. And you do get quite a lot of this already in the Windows Store. There's very nice reporting in the Windows Store about this. And you should really check that out. I think it was shown on a previous presentation here. But markup actually gives you that little bit more, because with markup you can actually view what pages your user views and how he goes to them, and you can add custom logging to it. Of course, it's all anonymous, very important. So these are the four things you can get with markup. Markup is free and available through NuGet, by the way. So you can get user statistics, statistics on crashes and errors, statistics on how your app is used, and even commerce statistics. So if you have in-app purchases, you can get that as well. How do you do that? It's actually very easy, because it's just a few lines of code. That's what I kind of like about it. In initialization of your app, you state analytic client.initialize with the key you get from markup. That's enough to initialize everything. If you want to catch all the navigation, and I'm immediately going to show you in what this results, this is the only line of code you have to write. So what this states is register to root frame of my application with the markup analytic client. And this will automatically keep the page views your user does and where he navigates to. And the third one I use this for is logging exceptions. You put this piece of code in the app unhandled exception part, and once something happens to your app that you forgot to handle, it will be caught by the Markdup Analytic client, and you will get a report on that, including the stack trace. And I'm going to show you in what this results. So let's see, Markdup. So these are the statistics of the app that was released yesterday. As you can see, this was release day. It's pretty obvious. What I wanted to show you, apparently there have been 4 crashes. I can live with that for now. And the nice thing is, you can just go and look at that. Here we go, the last exceptions, and well, I have a object reference not set to an instance of an object exception in my new stories requested handler. This is going to be hard to fix. As you can see, I get quite detailed information from what happens with my app. And apparently it's a lot of, apparently there's something wrong here. So I now know how I can go and fix that. And I got that from that one line of code. And the other interesting thing was, where is it? Engagement application page views. Here we go. So here you can see how many times certain parts of your application are accessed. So if you see, for example, that you have a part of your application that isn't accessed a lot, you might want to rethink about where you put the button to get to that part of the application. Let's see, I have like this data isn't up to date. But anyway, I apparently had, that's yesterday I think, 18 views of the friends overview while there's 415 views of the post view. Does that mean I should think more about getting that friends overview more on foreground or not? Well, stuff like that, decisions like that you can make based on the statistics you gathered here. And of course all of that is anonymous, so that's quite important as well, I think. So that's one you might want to look into, Markdup. It's a startup, if I'm not mistaken. So to summarize, I went a little bit over time, sorry about that. But to summarize, I'd say the 5 essentials in my head, or what I learned, and all I learned was from the mistakes we made, is that first you need focus. Focus on doing one thing well instead of doing a lot of things a bit bad, a bit good. And maybe even find that unique selling point, if that exists. Then look at the way your application looks. I would suggest to hire, if you're a developer like me, to hire a designer. You do not let the designer develop, so you probably shouldn't let a developer design. Make sure your app is reliable, and you can reach that by using proven components and by thinking about your architecture in advance, and by programming for failure in this case. Do think about performance. Task cancellation is a pretty important one, I noticed. The producer-consumer pattern can really help you to make your app more performant, because, well, you actually have only one part of your app producing data, and you've got a bunch of other parts that consume that same data, instead of all those other parts having to ask for a component to produce it as well. And then there's statistics and logs, pretty important to look into, to know how your users use your application, to know what results in crashes and how you can fix it. So with that, I would like to thank you for being here, and if there are any questions, go ahead. No questions? Okay. Well, I would like to thank you for being here and have a nice night.